from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, the candidates' last debate. Trump won't say if he'll accept the election results, and the push to retake Mosul from ISIS begins. In the debate, Donald Trump said he may not accept the outcome of the election.
Are you saying you're not prepared now to commit
what
to that principle?
What I'm saying is that I will tell you at the time. I'll keep you in suspense.
Hillary Clinton continued to hammer Trump on his treatment of women.
Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
And tanks advanced on Mosul as U.S. Army Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend said the battle against ISIS is fierce.
There's days where we're going to, you know, impose our will, and there's days the enemy gets a vote, and he's going to come out on top. This is a big operation in a long war.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Margaret Tollef, Aaron Blake, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Joining us now from Washington is Margaret Tollef. She covers the White House and campaign politics for Bloomberg News. Great to have you right here, Margaret. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be back.
Also from Washington, Aaron Blake is with us, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Aaron Blake, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Margaret, and Aaron.
Here it was in the debate, Chris Wallace pressing Donald Trump on whether or not he would accept the results of the U.S. election now less than 3 weeks away.
I want to ask you here on the stage tonight, do you make the same commitment that you will absolutely, sir, that you will absolutely accept the result of this election?
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing. The New York Times actually wrote an article about it that they don't even care. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters.
Margaret Tollef, here we are, the Republican candidate saying maybe he will and maybe he won't. Is there precedent for that kind of statement at this point in the campaign proceedings, Margaret?
Well, no, not in our modern history. And, you know, after the fact, there's been a lot of discussion about Al Gore and the Florida recount uh-huh. in 2000. But obviously those were issues raised after the voting. And B, if Donald Trump comes within 500 votes in a key swing state, obviously that would completely change the game. But that's not what we're talking about here. And I think you saw sort of this fast and furious reaction with many Republicans, John McCain among them, but just saying, you know, no, like, no, enough, stop. So, no, of course it's not precedented.
No, enough, stop. But it is not really stopping. Well, look at that. Here was Hillary Clinton in the same debate saying this isn't the way things work in our democracy.
That is not the way our democracy works. We've been around for 240 years. We've had free and fair elections. We've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them. And that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election.
And here's the president saying this week in the Rose Garden, standing next to Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, hey, stop whining, Mr. Trump.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections. And so I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
And here Trump yesterday in Delaware, Ohio.
I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
Aaron Blake, how do you interpret Donald Trump putting all the emphasis now, or so much of it, on the rigged election theme and the I may or may not accept the results theme? What does this mean?
Well, it means he's losing, essentially. If you look back at the first debate, this question was also asked then by Lister Holt when he asked both candidates if they would accept the results of the election. He asked both, but it was really directed at Trump given he had already been talking about the idea of a rigged election, said he could only lose Pennsylvania if there was voter fraud. And so he posed this question to both of them, and after some prodding, Trump said he would respect it, he would support Hillary Clinton as president. Now, that was a time when the polls were close. He was within a couple points, looking like this was a real race. After that debate, things kind of fell off the cliff and he quickly changed course. And now he's reinforced this idea that he may not accept the results. The real question here, I think, is this Donald Trump just being a provocateur and wanting us all to be talking about this constantly? Or is this something that he legitimately may do after the election, even if it's a lopsided loss, which it looks like it could be right now?
Legitimately may do what, Aaron?
It legitimately may not accept the results of the election. It's one thing to speculate about it. Donald Trump speculates about many things, leaves many questions open, doesn't take firm stances when asked direct questions like this. So he likes the idea that we're talking about this now. Will he actually follow through on this and not concede after Election Day, I think, is another question entirely.
Jack, you've got Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, President Obama, warning that this is dangerous to the Republic, to our sense of democracy. You have Trump supporters saying, well, we want to watch out for rigging and we want a fair election and don't make us accept it before it's happened. What do you see here, Jack?
Well, Mr. Trump has already, you mentioned his supporters, planted the canker of doubt among them. 48% of them, according to a recent poll, doubt the validity of the elections. Now, that really is something. He's already succeeded in undermining the confidence of his core supporters in our basic democratic institution. When you couple that with his warning in the last debate, the last but one debate, second debate, that he wanted to jail his opponent or at least prosecute her after the election, you're talking about an anti-democratic leader. One hesitates before the word fascist, but the word strongman, I think, applies. He's saying, I'm not going to be bound. If you elect me president, I won't be bound by the conventions that have kept a modicum of civility and that have kept our politics from heading into violence and extremism.
Yes, Aaron.
By the way, Jack made a very good point about the poll showing many Trump supporters actually buy into this. This is something that existed before Donald Trump in a lot of ways. If you look at past polling, a majority of Republicans have said that they believe voter fraud is a major issue in elections. There was a poll, in fact, in Wisconsin in 2014 that showed gave people several options for how many votes they think voter fraud actually affects. And a majority of Republicans said it affected thousands of votes in that state every election. So this is something that existed previously. Trump has seized upon it and really exploited it in an attempt to build his movement.
Margaret, that's perception, but there's been research done on this, and everything I've seen finds vanishingly small quantities of voter fraud in this country.
Right. We're talking about minuscule percentages, not enough to sway an election nationally. And of course, in a swing state, if the voting's very close, absolutely, it matters who turns out, whether there's any ballot irregularities, whether there are any examples of, voting by dead people or that sort of thing. But that is the kind of thing, those are the kind of questions that, I'll say conventional politician, I don't mean it in a bad way, would raise after the fact if that happened, if it were close, to sort of pre-flag it as an issue, to almost guarantee, to say that it is rigged. And then when pressed on what rigged means, to kind of fluctuate back and forth between actual election rigging or the idea that the media is not on your side or something like that, to sort of like amoeba-like, constantly change the definition or the goalposts of what would constitute riggedness or fraud. That's part of what we're seeing that's unprecedented. And I think both the Clinton campaign, but beyond that, more broadly, sort of a bipartisan coalition of establishment officials, let's say, are worried about two things. And one is actual, violence or mayhem or chaos on election day, slash people staying home, particularly maybe in some minority groups because they're afraid of what will happen, out on their way to the polls in fill-in-the-blank state. But also the idea of sort of coarsening or breaking a barrier so that it always now becomes like this, right? That if the practice until now has been to accept the results of an election, shake your opponent's hand, write them, for the outgoing president to write the incoming guy or woman a letter and say, it's yours now, I wish you the best, I'm rooting for you. If that's gone, if that's done, it's very hard to get it back. So I think there is sort of the immediate concern about violence or voter intimidation or suppression or kind of post-election violence, right? Marching in the streets by people who really believe that it was rigged. And then there's the kind of broader second wave concern that kind of the fabric of the democratic process will change as a result of this.
And then, of course, there's we saw this firebombing on the Republican office in Hillsborough, North Carolina on Tuesday. Yep. VP candidate Mike Pence was there. Here he was.
I wanted to come by to call attention to this cowardly attack on our supporters in North Carolina and, to no less extent, an attack on the American political system. This was an act of political terrorism.
And Pence calling out Trump supporters to be at polling places on Election Day. Here he was.
In recent years, we've had instances, proven instances of voter fraud. And that's why Donald Trump and I are encouraging all of our supporters around the country, and frankly, every American, whatever their politics, to take the opportunity to be involved in a respectful way in providing accountability at our polling places.
Jackie was asked if poll watchers, the kind we've always had, would be sufficient. And at first he said, yes, they're great. But then he said, no, we want our people there. Does that look like a recipe for peaceful, respectful poll watching?
It sounds like intimidation. And in states with open carry laws, I live in one, New Hampshire, there's nothing to stop someone from with a pistol strapped on his or her hip, showing off at the polling place and looking askance at people coming watching by. That by itself is intimidatory.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. The last debate, the move on Mosul. Trump says he'll keep us in suspense on accepting the election results. Obama says, stop whining. You can join us this hour. What do you see unfolding in the home stretch of this election season? Is the president right to tell Donald Trump to stop whining? Is Trump hurting Republicans down ballot? Is Clinton getting a pass on the WikiLeaks? Should she, if Russia is doing the leaking? And are you ready for Trump TV? Donald Trump says, I'll keep you in suspense. He had Republicans pushing back on that all over the place. One in your backyard, Jack, talking with NECN on Thursday, New Hampshire. U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte, former attorney general there, urged Trump to accept the outcome of the election. She's in a tough re-election bid against Democratic Governor Maggie Hassan.
I believe that, first of all, as a former attorney general, that he should accept the outcome and that this is important. I don't believe in that there's a rigged election system. If there are allegations that need to be investigated, they'll be investigated.
Please accept. We'll look at the down ballot situation there and the tone of all this at the Al Smith dinner in New York last night. Happens every time there's a presidential election. There were some very funny jokes there when it was Mitt Romney and Barack Obama 4 years ago. Last night, a little funny, but pretty tough, too. Here was Donald Trump joking about biased media and his wife, who was accused of partly plagiarizing her speech at the Republican convention in July.
You want the proof? Michelle Obama gives a speech, and everyone loves it. It's fantastic. They think she's absolutely great. My wife, Melania, gives the exact same speech. And people get on her case.
Okay, that's kind of funny. Hillary Clinton self-deprecating, which is a typical thing for this sitting. Here she was last night.
I took a break from my rigorous nap schedule to be here. And as you've already heard, it's a treat for all of you, too, because usually I charge a lot for speeches like this.
And then it got ugly. Here was Trump last night. It's supposed to be a joke. You judge.
Here she is tonight in public pretending not to hate Catholics.
And the boos rained down. They didn't quite get it. Hillary Clinton, one more here in New York at the Al Smith Memorial Foundation dinner.
Every year, this dinner brings together a collection of sensible, committed, mainstream Republicans, or as we now like to call them, Hillary supporters.
Jack Media, you've watched these over the years. I've seen them be very, very funny and sometimes kind of shocking how the candidates could step out of the role of pugilists and become humorous for a couple of hours there. Last night just barely made it into the funny territory.
Yes, and you know, with Donald Trump, it had his performance had the sort of truncated trajectory of what we see in the debates. He started out strong. I was laughing out loud after joke after joke.
Yep.
His timing was good, and then he just descended into this, you know, missed the entire genre, was making it serious, talked about her corruption, got a boo there, and just lost it, as he does in the debates. You know, he's really good for 20 minutes, and then he loses it.
And here we stand. We've got listeners calling in from all over the country. Marcia in Iowa City. Oh, Marcia, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, I'm so pleased to talk to you. Of all your shows, I like the Fridays the best.
Oh, great. Great to have you here.
I really appreciate your comment about perception versus fact. Objective information is how we make decisions. And I like civilization and the ability to pretend to predict what might happen in the future in an evidence-based world. One of your guests used the F word, fascist. F word, yes, that is a fascist that we're looking at. They're on the strain. Most people recognize their oppressors. And there are people that are angry, certainly. I'm one of them. But Trump plays on that, and people who are angry are so easily manipulated. It's insulting. It's demeaning.
But what do you say, Marcia, to Americans who look at the way the political system has run under both parties for decades now and feel like it just hasn't looked out for me, and here comes Donald, and he's promising to take my interests into account?
He hijacked the Republican Party, and it's a shame that that we have a two-party system, or that people think we do, because we don't. There are options out there.
He says, I'm an option. I'm not really a traditional Republican. I'm not a Democrat. He says he's an option, Marcia.
Well, be realistic. To me, he's the poster child, and I mean child, for the worst side of arrogant, boorish, reprehensible, wealthy, powerful men.
Marcia, we've got it. You're pretty plain on where you stand. Let me get one more from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Saeed, thank you for calling. Saeed, you're on the air. Are you ready to vote, Saeed? Ready to trust the election outcome?
Thank you, Tom. And the answer will be a flat no. I don't think our democracy is undermined by Trump saying that he doesn't categorically accept the outcome of the election. I think our democratic process has already been undermined by the lack of fairness in the process. What I'm talking about here is, for example, paid agitators paid by the DNC and their surrogates have gone and shut down free speech. We know that as a fact. We know as a fact that CNN gave questions ahead of a town hall meeting to the Clinton campaign. We know that there are public and private positions and that these are diametrically opposed to one another.
Said on those first two, how do you know those first two is fact? Let me pick those two up and look at those. But we definitely hear you not feeling confidence in the process. I'll go to that. I mean, here was President Obama in Florida yesterday, Miami Gardens, saying that he's worried about people and doubt about the country's democracy.
When you try to sow the seeds of doubt in people's minds about the legitimacy of our elections, that undermines our democracy. Then you're doing the work of our adversaries for them. Because our democracy depends on people knowing that their vote matters.
Okay. He makes that case, and he's pointing at Donald Trump and saying, you're undermining democracy, you're doing the work of our adversaries. But, Margaret, there's a caller from Green Bay who already has kind of laundry list, a punch list of things that he believes are fact that undermine his confidence. One, the paid agitators. Donald Trump talked about that in that debate. What was that about, Margaret? And two, that Democrats got the questions before the debates. He's saying fact.
So, and the question on the debates, Aaron can help me out maybe, is a little bit murky, but from what I've read, it seems to go the other way, that it's possible that from those emails, looks like that Donna Brazile had sort of suggested some questions that they get are X, and they may have got passed up the chain the other way. I'm not sure about vice versa, but whether it's that or whether it's the fact that both sides seem to have folks encouraging behavior at rallies and the Trump side as well, there's been this bounty encouraging people to go to Clinton events as agitators. And
bounty, you mean like money, cash?
Well, yeah, I want to shout out that Clinton's husband, you know, stuff about the sexual allegation, you know, the sort of.
But what about the other side, Aaron? What about paid agitators by the Democrats? Our caller is asserting there on the basis of what he's heard.
Well, this is based off of a video that was put out over the weekend by James O'Keefe, who's kind of a conservative, you know, does a lot of undercover videos. He was
We've
the
heard
guy
from him
behind
before him.
Yeah, he did the Acorn videos mm-hmm. that were pretty damning, and then some other things that didn't go quite as well. He got some Democratic operatives, local Democratic operatives, including those with ties to major Democratic organizations, on tape talking about efforts to bus in people across state lines to vote. It all sounded very unsavory. These men lost their jobs. It certainly proved that there are people out there who at least muse about doing these things and claim, you know, that they've accomplished certain things that are fraudulent and gotten around the rules.
The Democratic Party side, you're saying?
Yes, yes. And these were Democratic operatives. And so, you know, it proves that there are some people out there who are talking about this and perhaps even attempting it. What we're talking about in this campaign, though, is large-scale voter fraud that could actually change an election. So I think there's a difference between saying that voter fraud exists. It certainly does. There are proven cases, not many. But there's a difference between saying that and saying that it is enough to change an election in American society.
Jim in Manchester, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Listen, the notion of stuffing ballot boxes with some surreptitious little crook is just too hokey. But you've got structural problems here from the get-go, okay? Electoral College from 250 years ago. You've got Citizens United, which corrupts everything, okay? You've got, excuse me one second here with my cough.
Yeah.
You've got quite a few structural problems here. I'm going to vote Green Party because the DNC rigged Bernie's election. Okay, let's face it. I mean, this Pollyanna talk about what a great democracy we are is frequently a lot of hot air. And I also object to the fact that even though Trump's a showman and trying to, you know, put this bait out there about I'm not going to accept the election. Well, you know, we fix a lot of elections. What about John Kennedy in 1960 when Mayor Daley stole it at 3 o'clock in the morning? I actually watched that. Okay.
You watched it. What do you mean by that,
Supreme
Jim?
Court and Jeb Bush, who stole the election from under Gore, and he rolled over and played dead. That was totally illegal. Okay, the Supreme Court had no jurisdiction in a state election. Look at the federal laws. Every state is independent in running their own federal election.
We got it. We know how it turned out. We remember the allegations from all the way back in JFK days. It's a long time ago, but there they were. Al Gore, of course, said, wow, I'll accept this for the good of the republic. Jack Beatty, Pollyanna talk to talk about the great American democracy, and here we are. There is the kind of verbalized evidence of this shaking of the foundation of confidence. But Jim says there's already been reason.
Well, he looks at these structural matters, the role of money in our politics, Citizens United. He looks at these, the treatment of Bernie Sanders that the WikiLeaks email revealed. And he certainly got a lot of a point there, but nobody that I know of. So there's some fact there, but you set that against the non-fact on the other side that elections. One study I think showed over a billion out of a billion votes over a period of years, 34 or something like that were fraudulent. Our system of voting, precisely because it's so decentralized. And under the control of politicians of different parties, 11 of the 15 closest states, in those states, the Secretary of State is a Republican. Does that person have a motive to subvert Donald Trump's election? Hardly. So yes, you can point to these facts, and they're structural, the money and so on. It's rooted. But you can't point to facts on the other side about rigged elections.
We're looking at a week in the news. Margaret Tolliff, more WikiLeaks revelations this week. What's the latest with Hillary Clinton and the WikiLeaks that keep being pointed at her?
Well, God, it's hard to know where to start. Do you have a topic? I mean, many of the things that have been some of the things that have been released continue to seek to draw connections between her time at the State Department and foundation donors, others emphasize.
There was this quid pro quo allegation. Was that from WikiLeaks on the? You know, we'll classify this email differently
with the FBI.
With the FBI, if you'll give us, you know, some more real estate here and there, this just keeps coming. Is it hurting her, Margaret?
Not as much as it would be if Trump weren't so much of a distraction. And let me explain. Number one, there's such a flood of the WikiLeaks material, and it's all being released so fast. So you can, on any given day, you might have emails about, you know, let's say they're semi-long shortlist for vice presidential people, where you can see that, wow, the Clinton campaign is just as sort of political and manipulative as any presidential campaign when they think about who a running mate should be. Other issues that are meant to cause divisions between Clinton and the left, kind of the Bernie Sanders camp of the Democratic Party. Others go to this notion of whether there's a quid pro quo. And there's any way that you can read these emails that, you know, some of it's sort of not great or raises questions that can be answered. There's not been like sort of that definitive smoking gun. It's one thing for someone to say, I'll do me a favor if you do me a favor. But when you peel back the onion a little further and it turns out that the quid pro quo didn't actually happen, so, and it's not even clear that it was exactly being requested. It was sort of like, hey, I'll help you out, but could you help me out? No, I can't. Sorry. Okay. So it's number one, it's sort of ambiguous. But number two, what has been going on the Trump side has become such a distraction. And when you look at the polling, just since the sort of groping allegations emerged within the last, you know, 10 days or so, that has been what's driven the poll trends in the opposite direction, that if he were not hobbling himself, it would be easier for him to redirect questions and attention to the nature of what's being leaked. Kind of the second part of it is that, although journalists love reading this stuff, and trust me, every time a batch comes out, you know, we're on the campaign bus, like, oh my God, there's more, you know, and you
this
read
week
it,
about
you
her closed door speech to Morgan Stanley, where she's talking about Social Security and reform there and what that might entail.
The Wall Street speeches, we spent all those months waiting, you know, during the Bernie Sanders, during the primary. What did she actually say in the speech? Who's got the transcripts? And now they're out, but they're out so late. And in the middle of all the stuff that's going on the Trump side, they really have kind of blurred together. I don't think they have gotten the traction that they certainly would have, you know, in February or something like that.
It was interesting this week, Marco Rubio saying to fellow Republicans, be careful with these WikiLeaks. You know, today they're being released at Hillary Clinton. Tomorrow it could be us, he said on Wednesday.
Today it's them. Tomorrow it could be us. And just think about this. Do we really want to be a country where foreign leaders or foreign intelligence agencies can blackmail our elected officials and say to them that unless you do what we want you to do, we're going to release emails from your campaign manager, your wife, your daughter, your son, and we're going to embarrass you. So unless you want to be embarrassed, you better do what we want you to do.
And I'm looking at news today from USA Today saying that Russia is looking at sending monitors, Aaron, to U.S. polling stations on November 8th to monitor the U.S. elections. Another sort of effort to get in there and maybe embarrass the United States. What about the allergy that Marco Rubio, is that him getting back at Donald Trump for the, you know, little hands, little guy wax during the early primary debates? Or is that him with a real concern about the future of our politics and even Republicans under a Russian gun one day?
Yeah, little Marco, comes back to bite him, I guess. Look, I think this is mostly about – I don't think it's about Trump for Rubio. I think this is about Rubio being on the hawkish side of the Republican Party right now and actually raising some very real questions that journalists confront as we're thumbing through all of these emails. You know, the fact is that they're out there and people are covering them, and so I think it kind of is a cycle in which people decide they need to cover it. But this is a real dilemma. Are we giving the Russian government what they want by covering these things? And I think it's interesting that he's basically one of the first people to really raise this issue, because it is a situation that could come up again and again and again.
We're looking at a week in the news. Listeners, you can join us. Is Donald Trump hurting Republicans down ballot? Is Hillary Clinton getting a pass on the WikiLeaks? Aaron Blake is here. Margaret Tolliver, Jack Beatty. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week in Nigeria, 21 girls captured by Boko Haram more than 2 years ago were reunited and celebrated with their families, who said they never thought they would see the day.
Praise the Lord!
A Canadian campaign from the north looked to boost American spirits in a tough election year.
We know you've got some really big decisions to make, but as you're thinking about your future, we just want you to know that
you guys are great.
You really are great.
Oh, thanks, Canada. And after Donald Trump called Hillary Clinton a nasty woman at this week's debate, nasty woman memes took off all over, and Spotify streams of Janet Jackson's song Nasty soared.
Nasty.
Looking at a week in the news, and you can join us looking at the last debate, the move on Mosul, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. You can join us. Are you cheering the attacks on Mosul? Are you worried about the U.S. troops there? Worried about getting stuck again? How do you read the firebombing of the Republican campaign outpost in North Carolina? Is Hillary Clinton getting a pass on the WikiLeaks? Should she, if Russia's doing the leaking? Aaron Blake is here, political reporter for The Washington Post. Margaret Tolove covers the White House for Bloomberg News. Jack Beatty's here as well. Laurie is calling from Columbus Junction, Iowa. Laurie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just believe that there seems to be a lot of media bias against Trump or anybody else that's running against Hillary on your program, for instance. I believe the WikiLeaks. How come people are, every little thing that Donald Trump does or says is brought up. Nobody asked Chelsea how she feels about her dad molesting women. But they ask Ivanka Trump, you know, it just seems very biased. And I'm not saying I'm a Trump supporter. I'm definitely not a Hillary supporter. But why weren't the Libertarian and the Green Party candidates invited to a debate? We're not getting a choice. I do totally believe that our system is rigged. Why do we still have the Electoral College? Our vote does not count.
Lori, I'm sorry for that feeling. I mean, that's not what anybody wants Americans to feel, and yet you're not alone in that. Jack, what about the large claim of media bias that Donald Trump is making right now?
Well, you know, insofar as the media has collectively reported what these, is it 9 or 10 women now have said about him, and they have gone to some lengths to substantiate, insofar as you can, the claims of these women by talking to people the women spoke to at the time, you could, is that bias or is that simply reporting what is the news? But of course, to Trump, it looks, and Trump's people, it looks like bias when said against Bill Clinton and all those issues.
But Bill Clinton and his family got raked over the coals back in the 90s. I mean, if you were around, you remember that. It's not like that was a walk in the park.
It was he was impeached pretty much over it, but you know, Mr. Trump himself, you know, muffed an opportunity to go ahead with that in the debate when Chris Wallace asked an open-ended question on the one hand about what women were saying about Trump, and on the other hand he said, Mrs. Clinton, what people have said about your husband. And Hillary Clinton pushed Bill Clinton away, didn't respond to that at all, went right to how Trump speaks of women, and really sounded like a conviction politician for one of the, you know, really striking moments of her campaign.
Women know how this feels. Every woman knows how this feels.
Yes. And then Trump could have come back and said, but wait a minute, you left out, you didn't answer the question about, you know, how your husband is treated. He didn't do it. He just wasn't adept enough to do it, I guess, or he had just run out of gas. This was past his 25-minute limit.
Well, I don't know. I mean, but Aaron, you hear Laurie's exasperation there, and you know, media bias. She looks at and sees and says that's one thing, but she's got a wider exasperation with this. I mean, is this not a danger sign for our political system if that sentiment is widely held?
I think it's a very bad thing, and I think it was a long time coming in this campaign. I think, you know, there was a poll this week from Quinnipiac University which showed that 55% of people think the media is biased against Donald Trump. And this wasn't just Republican-leaning voters, of course. This was 61% of independents. This was 20% of Democrats who sense this. I think that, you know, Trump has put so much out there. He's been such a provocateur. He's basically been begging the media to be hard on him, to point at all these controversial statements and to, you know, rile up that base that sees that coverage and thinks, hey, the media is out to get my candidate. I think that's been part of his plan this whole time, and there's all these questions about whether he's going to start a media company if he loses this election. That would certainly feed into this. But I do think that, you know, the Bill Clinton stuff in particular, as you said, has been raised repeatedly in the past. The Washington Post ABC News poll last week showed that only about 3 in 10 voters thought Bill Clinton was a legitimate issue in his treatment of women. About 6 in 10
thought
Trump was.
Now you mean. I mean, it
was
raised big time back in the day, of course.
Yes, yes. But I think, you know, even if you look at what voters think is a legitimate issue, far more people think the Trump stuff is legitimate. He's the guy who's actually running for president. Even when it comes down to whether, you know Hillary Clinton's role in allegedly enabling her husband, only 35% of likely voters think that's a legitimate issue. So we are in effect reflecting what people think is important to this campaign, and I think that's important to note.
Here's Melania Trump this week on the woman issue and talking with CNN on Monday, defending her husband, calling accusations of sexual misconduct against Donald Trump lies. She dismissed his language in that 2005 tape in which he made his lewd comments about women as boys talk.
I heard many different stuff, boys talk. The boys, that the way they talk when they grow up and they want to sometimes show each other, oh, this and that, and talking about the girls. I was surprised, of course.
Boys talk. J.D. in Nashville, Tennessee. J.D., thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a couple of things. I neither support. I support neither.
JD, you're breaking up on us there. JD, you're breaking up. I'm sorry for that. Get us on a better line, JD. Love to have you, Leslie in New Orleans. Leslie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm just calling to talk about the fact that one of the things that I think Donald Trump brings up, he certainly brought up in the debate, was that in 30 years, Hillary Clinton hasn't done anything. First of all, I'm sure the First Lady of Arkansas is not responsible for making policy decisions for the entire country. But also, you need look no further than New Orleans to see that a business person is not always the best person in the public space.
Who are you thinking of? What are you
Ray
thinking
Nagin.
Of? Oh, Ray Nagin.
Ray Nagin was a great businessman. He was a horrible politician because in all of the years that he was mayor, he never figured out how to work in the public sector and work with people. He could not get the council on his side. He could not get things done. And that's also why he ended up going to jail. It's because never figure out that there's some things you do in the private sector you can't do in the public sector.
Okay, but here's Donald Trump, and he's got a large, at this point from the polls, looks like a subset of Americans saying he has got my support. Why do you think that is, Leslie?
I think because a lot of people don't realize that those two things are not mutually exclusive. You cannot do the same thing. I'm sure he's probably okay as a business person, but the choices you make are not the same, and that's not how government works. He's not running for CEO. He's running for president, and that's a big difference.
Yeah. So, Leslie, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Ron, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think there was a telling moment after the end of the debate. If you watch and contrast the behaviors of Clinton and Trump, Trump stood on the stage as if he was waiting for his fans to come to him. Nobody came. He left without greeting anyone. Clinton went to the audience and greeted them and made personal contact. I think that moment says that Trump already knows he's lost.
A lot of people speculated that this week. But Margaret, you know, the other theme out there is that there's a vote that's just not fully articulated that could still come out. Do you think he really believes it's done?
I think that nothing's done until Election Day, and that every candidate knows that and tells themselves that. But every candidate also attempts to get the best polling and information available. And you can see by some of the Trump campaign strategic decisions, like in Virginia, for example, with pulling back, you can see with the places that he's still going to now, states that he'd hoped to have locked down by now. You can see with some of these really interesting numbers in Arizona, like if John McCain survives in Arizona, but but Donald Trump doesn't, or if it's very close, then you can understand that there's been a rift between him and the Republican Party. Some Republicans may emerge okay from it. Others, like Marco Rubio, who we were talking about earlier, may have problems. Donald Trump, I assume, has always gone forward with this campaign with kind of a dual-track strategy. One is, what if I win? And the other is, you know, what if I don't? And you could say all politicians do that. But for politicians, their question, if they lose a bid for the presidency, either in the primary or in the general, is where do I go in politics from here? For Donald Trump, obviously, that's, you know, not the question. So I think when you look at his choice of campaign chairman, when you look at the way he's sort of positioned himself on a dual track, that he has always been preparing for the much more likely eventuality of what if he doesn't. I mean, look, he came through a 17-person contest. He has no political experience. He's up against the Clinton machine. The country demographically has been tracking more in favor of Democrats for president for many years now. Any business person looking at statistics would understand that the best thing he had going for him was the fact that so many people don't particularly like Hillary Clinton, and that it's really hard for someone from the same party to get elected to effectively a third term. But even with all of that being true, this has always been a very difficult race for him.
Just in from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, new poll there showing Trump and Clinton deadlocked now in Georgia, which, of course, went for Mitt Romney in 2012. J.D.'s calling back from Nashville. Hi, J.D., you're on the air. We'll try and save that call. Here you are.
Hi, Tom. I'm on a landline now.
Okay.
Just briefly, there was a comment made on NPR earlier this week about the trust that we have, and trust is an important thing. However, this is a government that's founded on checks and balances. We don't necessarily trust. It's our responsibility, I believe, to question our leaders and to question the methods. So those that are complaining about this and that and the other are legitimately complaining.
Sure.
The second comment I'd like to make is about the media. Biased or not, they're selling a product. And when someone's selling a product, they're going to sell the product that the people want. So you're getting the news that you ask for. That's why you're getting it. If you want to change the media, then you need to ask for other news. I'm an independent. I'm a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah.
And as far as tickets go, I think I would vote for George Carlin and Noam Chomsky.
But what about people who are looking just to thinking that they're just going to bail out? They're losing confidence. They're not into it, JD.
Well, if you don't vote, don't complain. You have to vote. You absolutely have to vote because that's what America is all about. And I am diehard American. I love this country. I do not like the government. But I don't like any government. Any government of any country is a bit aggravating. The people are the country, and you have to vote. You have to get out there and say yay or nay, and then you can go to the coffee shop and complain to your cronies.
All right, J.D., we've got it. We hope the complaints aren't too loud at the coffee shop. I appreciate your call. I want to look for a moment abroad, if we may. We've had this big advance on Mosul this week. Iraqi forces in the lead. But plenty of Americans there as well, and a casualty yesterday, the first, I believe, American to die in that advance on Mosul, held by ISIS. Here's a little from outside the city. You had the expelled city police force. They've been helping with the Iraqi army with logistics, securing surrounding areas once they've been taken back. And this is a Mosul police general speaking about how he feels after his village was liberated yesterday.
I feel great happiness today, first because we liberated our areas and our people from ISIS. Everyone is happy, not just me. The officers, the recruits, everyone is happy. Today I went to my parents. Such great happiness.
Celebrating there, but it's still early days here. Defense Secretary Ash Carter was talking with reporters on a flight to Ankara, Turkey. He said that even after the U.S. military assists Iraqi forces in retaking Mosul from ISIS, or ISIL, and, of course, that hasn't happened yet. But he says when and if it happens, there'll be a lot more work to do then.
While it will be necessary and we will surely collapse ISIL's control of Mosul, there will be a big job of stabilization and reconstruction after.
Aaron Blake, we've seen this attack on energy facilities, power facilities outside of Kirkuk, which is in Kurdish territory. Kurds, of course, playing a large role here in the attack on Mosul. All the messages from Washington and Baghdad this week have been positive. We're going in. We're strong. We're going to take it. No problem. But is it that clear that this is going to be a sweep of Mosul?
It's really not. You never know what's going to happen in these situations. I think that, you know, this reinforces in large part the idea that this is still very much a war that is taking place that the United States is taking part in. And the death of an American service member, I think, really drives that home. I'm not sure people have really processed that given we're in the middle of a campaign. But, you know, the taking back of Mosul would certainly be a huge event in this whole conflict, but it also reinforces the fact that this is something that is still going on and likely still will be going on for a long time here, including decisions about how much and whether to involve Americans on the ground, which Americans are on the ground even if they're not considered combat troops.
Yes, they are, and exposed right now. They're at pains to remind us. Jack, what are you thinking as you see those Iraqi forces stream across the desert toward Mosul and U.S. Special Forces, of course, sprinkled right through?
That there is a humanitarian crisis building up here of just immense proportion. The UN humanitarian chief, Stephen O'Brien, said 1.5 million people are at risk of being targeted by bombs dropped by our planes, caught in a crossfire, or used as human shields by ISIS.
Better to leave them under ISIS, Margaret?
As U.S. policy demonstrates, it is much harder to turn things around, even if you have a strategy, than just the strategy. Barack Obama was elected as an anti-war president, and this legacy will remain long after he's gone.
Here we are, though, right now with boots on the ground. Margaret Tolla with Bloomberg News, Aaron Blake with The Washington Post, Jack Beatty, our thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.